Welcome to Philosophy 507, Wittgensteiner and Schopenhauer and their influences. As I look around the class, I see what I usually see, basketball players. It's the same every year. You basketball players sign up for this course because you think it's this easy thing, what you call a layout.
I think you mean layup, Professor Wolf.
Indeed, but here's what I'm telling you now. If you think my philosophy course is part of this university's vast and cynical basketball factory, you are in for an eye-opener. If you cannot grasp that philosophy is, as Wittgenstein says, the logical clarification of thought, you might as well go back to your stupid game with its cold presses and jam breaks.
Those aren't actual things, Professor.
And this is the essence of the question posed by the great Schopenhauer. What are things? Do they exist outside the mind? What kinds of things are there, and where can I get some?
Isn't it Schopenhauer, Professor?
Isn't what Schopenhauer?
No, Schopenhauer. And it's Wittgenstein, right?
Is it? Is the word independent of the thing? Does the name exist at the level of absolutes? Do you know what your friend Vitty Vitty Steiner Bang Bang would say about that?
No. What?
I have no idea. I've never read any of his work. I couldn't get into it. It just seems like these guys are talking about nothing, you know?
Actually, philosophy really helps me with basketball.
Then get out of this classroom and go play ball. Beat Ohio Wesleyan. Crush Harden Simmons.
Are they big rivals of ours?
No, but I flunked out of both places. Here's a discussion of college basketball coming right up. And now he says they wrecked the game when they transitioned out of peach baskets. Colin McEnroe.
Yeah, I liked it better when Dr. Nesmith first called me in to show me. I thought the peach baskets were nice. Now they got all these space-age materials. Don't care for it very much. This is, in fact, our 2016 NCAA Division I and III men's basketball championship bracket, with some discussion of the women's brackets, but probably not very much because...
Do you know he was from Canada?
Nesmith?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Then their next basketball player was Steve Nash.
Yeah.
It was a long
right.
dry spell.
The first voice you hear is one of our two anchors. That's Bill Curry. I don't need to tell you who Bill Curry is. He's playing the part of Bill Curry, but he's currently a columnist for Salon and many other things besides. Julia Pestel making her 18th appearance here on our station in the last 17 days. She's a founding member of CT Improv. She hosts WNPR's The Radius Project podcast and many other qualifications as well. But then they've been a team since the first year we did this was, what, 5 or 6 years ago, something like that, right?
Not a team. It's highly competitive.
Well, this is a deep rivalry.
This is not team sport here. We're talking about team sport. You're
but
confused.
Sort of a Hepburn and Tracy thing.
She comes here to hurt and embarrass me.
Every year I do less work and do better.
Yes. That's right. When she beat my bracket by just choosing the schools whose mascots could eat the other mascot, that was a hard year.
That was a
very, very hard year.
Let me tell you who else you're going to meet as the show goes on. Later in this segment, you'll hear Baby Obama, Brandon Sherrod, senior forward for the Yale Bulldogs. They're making their first appearance in the NCAA tournament since 1962. You'll hear all about that when we talk to Brandon. Mike Pesca will be joining us, as he does every year, although I had to pre-tape that interview earlier today. And then towards the end of the show, you'll hear Howie Dickenman, a coaching legend himself, retiring head coach of the Central Connecticut State University Blue Devils men's basketball team. Making her debut this year will be the president of Amherst. The reason for this is because we like to take a look at Division III sometimes, and Amherst has turned into kind of a powerhouse. They've got both the men's team and the women's team into the Division III Final Four, which is happening way earlier than the Division I. So.
UConn of the Pioneer
they are,
Valley.
They are. The UConn of the Pioneer Valley. Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Exactly. But first of all, we want to kind of introduce you to this idea. We're talking about brackets and bracketology. I'm assuming you basically know what that is. Every year, college basketball teams have these big playoffs. People fill out their brackets. They have office pools. They have loads of laughs and fun, and then they lose their money. So we're going to help you do that more artfully. And so what happens is, you know, Bill comes at this with some overarching theories about basketball and with some attempt to master the details. And Julia just makes up some cockamamie process. Maybe what we could do is just take a case in point. You know, we could just take a first round matchup, like the number one seed Kansas versus Austin Peay, which I think is how you say the name.
Great.
So, well, first of all, maybe Bill would just say what his conventional basketball wisdom about that.
My conventional basketball wisdom, and we'll be talking about Kansas again because UConn may be facing them after the – assuming they can get past Austin Peay, then you'd be facing Kansas. And Kansas is one of the teams I was able to catch a little glance at this year, and they are pretty ferocious. They're the number one overall seed in this tournament. Mm. And they have – it's the kind of team that UConn has trouble handling, which is all these NBA-looking bodies under the glass. There's a guy named Perry Ellis or Ellis Perry. It's a team with – everybody has to reverse their first and last names. He's about 6'8", and he's a monster. And my guess is that the Austin Peay team will come to take the floor, take one sidelong glance at Kansas, and concede.
All right. So, what can you tell us about Kansas versus Austin Peay?
Okay. Well, every year I just want to say I have a really well thought out strategy here. Past ones have included
brilliant, actually,
anagramming names, mascot, you know, Darwinian fitness, etc. Last year I did mottos, state mottos. But this year we just went all out for weird facts. So I just want to come out of the gate and say this is going to make no sense whatsoever. And I'd like to thank the team of interns who got really into helping me out with this.
Actually, I worked more on it than the interns did.
Oh,
they got tired after a while.
I'd like to thank my team of Collins hours.
I have been your intern for this show.
So, okay, our first fun fact about Kansas is, and I've selected only one fact per school, this is very cutthroat, is they signal the end of classes by blowing a loud whistle, and that loud
whistle. A steam whistle.
Yes, and the name of that whistle is Big Tudor, which I think is the funniest thing ever.
Right.
That's a pretty strong fun fact.
And the rule, by the way, is at Kansas that if you're in class and the steam whistle goes off, the Big Tudor goes off, you can just leave. Even the professor could be in the middle of his or her sentence. It doesn't matter. You're allowed to leave. They tried bells. They don't like bells. They like the big steam whistle that the whole campus can hear.
Yes. Now, Austin Peay, this is very sad. The school's name for the governor of Tennessee who passed the evolution education law that led to the Scopes trial. So we've got terrible history.
I'm looking to see who you're rooting for here.
Well, this is really tough. You know, I think I'm going to have to honestly give it to Big Tudor. I think it's a more fun fact. And yeah, Austin Peay, that's just a complex history that we don't want to talk too much about.
Right.
So, that's so maybe we are in the same team.
Yeah, well, you do just because you agree about one. There are many, many matchups and permutations. Just because you agree about one of them.
We'll see how Big Tudor does when faced with other amazing facts on here.
Well, we could. Why don't we just we can play it out here? Because
this is our bracket. Because this is UConn bracket.
This is, in fact, the next thing in the bracket is Colorado versus UConn. So, Bill, you can analyze that one for us.
Okay, so bookies say that Colorado is favored, and that's not going to turn out to be true because UConn's going to win that game. And UConn is doing what UConn has done a dozen times in the last 20 years, which is get way better at the end than they seemed to be getting as the team went along. And they have two things going for them. One, and there, if you think some of the great NBA championship teams, the 33-game Lakers, the great Walton Trailblazers, you have a team where everybody is really good at their really personifies their position. You have a great defensive center here, a great swing, and also sort of a point forward in Daniel Hamilton, the center being Amita Brima. Jalen Adams is really coming along. Next year, this team will easily be rated in the top 10 preseason. These guys all come back. This is an easy call for a top 10 team going in. The question is, how close did they just get in the last week? Mm-hmm. And first one's easy because I'm going to do a little bit of a Julia thing here because I'm going to say versus Colorado, there's also the really good chance that it's Colorado and they'll come stoned. Okay, so they'll all be high, and so we'll beat them by over 100.
I have to interject here.
They'll be also enjoying the oxygen-rich environment of wherever they are.
That's
that
right.
Is not Colorado. They're not used to having so much oxygen to breathe.
UConn actually has more cannabis violations than any other school.
Colorado wouldn't have any because it's no longer illegal. So they would have zero cannabis violations. That doesn't mean they're having zero cannabis, though, does it? Really,
correct.
Julia, when you think about it.
If you flushed a lot of it down the toilet and broke the toilet.
So what I'm saying.
All right. So what I'm saying
is that Colorado goes strong. And then I'm just going to point out this. UConn has the difficulty of then facing the Big Tudor in the second round. Absent the Austin Peay miracle. And it is. It's the toughest kind of team for UConn to play. But UConn does something. The way college basketball has been changing, UConn, really great defensive teams like UConn also do better. They outperform other teams. because there's not that kind of discipline in the new star system that's kind of seeped down into college ball. And so I will just say that if UConn wins its second round game, they'll be favored to win the whole tournament. This is the number one seed. This is the best team I saw on television. But I honestly believe there could be an upset.
All right.
There you go.
Any more UConn bootlicking and you could go to work for
I'm done.
For the Hartford Current sports page. As you look at as you look at Connecticut versus Colorado, Julia, how does it look?
Well, you know, UConn, and people can call in with fun facts if they want, but we really struggle with this one. You know, the best fun fact we had was kind of sad and depressing, which was their first mascot, Jonathan the Husky, was hit by a car before he ever got to be a mascot. Wow, that's terrible.
I take no responsibility for that fun fact.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's got Ross Levin written all over it.
Find another word for fun fact next year,
Ada. But you know what's a lot more fun is Colorado.
Anything. Whatever you're about to say next.
Colorado has a diner in that town that is named after a cannibal. And I think that is so hilarious. And it's a very popular diner. So I'm got to give it to the cannibal.
Like the Donners or something?
No, his name was Alfred. What was his name? I should be at this place in my notes, too. And so I think it was like one of those things, like up in some. It wasn't Donner, but it was that same
Alfred kind, Packer.
Alfred Packer, yeah.
Who would go to a diner named after a cannibal when you think about it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a counterintuitive choice.
That's what makes it a fun fact, and that's what's going to keep us aligned, Bill, because I got Colorado going forward.
They do stand-up comedy there where they get up and say, so you don't like your mother-in-law? Just eat the noodles.
Yeah.
Boom. Some cannibal humor.
You're taking Colorado over UConn?
Well, I have to say, I watched 0.8 seconds of basketball this year so far, I think you know which 0.8 it was.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What? Do you live in Colorado Springs? What is this deal? It's not whether you watch basketball or not.
All right, while they argue this out, we're going to throw to some tape here. This is a conversation I had yesterday, because he's very busy getting educated and getting ready for the March Madness playoffs, with Baby Obama, as we call him. And increasingly, it's become a popular name for him. That would be Brandon Sherrod of Yale. The last time we talked to Brandon Sherrod, things were a little bit different. For one thing, Yale had not won the Ivy League title and thus qualified for March Madness. Also, he had not set an NCAA record for most consecutive field goals in basketball games. So things are a little bit different. He was on our show about President Obama and basketball and the audacity of hoop, and he did reveal that he himself has some political ambitions. But I think we have to focus on basketball today. You guys are about to play Baylor. Now, where, Brandon, will this game be played?
We'll be playing in Providence, Rhode Island on Thursday afternoon at 2:45 p.m. at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's actually sort of, in terms of travel, that's a good thing for you guys. Don't get all tired out with travel. So they're a 5, you're a 12 seed. Have you guys scouted Baylor now? Do you know much about them?
Yeah, so today in practice we did a little bit of scout for their defense. They play a 1-1-3 zone, which is pretty weird. They really spread guys out, and it's tough to kind of penetrate that defense. So we got to look at a few clips in the middle of practice, and we got to work on trying to score against their defense earlier on. So it was nice to kind of get that in. Tomorrow we should have a little bit more in-depth scouting report talking about their personnel and who's going to be doing the majority of the scoring and who we need to stop and how we can be successful. So the coaching staff is working around the clock to watch film and digest as much as they can so that we can have the best game plan to win.
Yeah, so they're big. They're probably a little bit bigger than you. You play big for your size.
Right.
They've got a rebounder named Rico Gathers. I feel like whenever your name is a complete sentence and it kind of describes what as a rebounder you try to do, that's an advantage. On the other hand, he's announced that he wants to play in the NFL, so he might be thinking more about football than basketball. That may give you some kind of an advantage. So we should quickly talk about the record because you hadn't said it the last time we talked to you. So this was 30 consecutive field goals over how many different games?
I believe it was over a course of 5 games.
Yeah. Obviously, one of the things you have to do there is take high percentage shots. Right. Is there any other secret to being the person who – I mean, this is going to be – it's going to be a long time probably before somebody breaks this record, 30 field goals without a miss.
Yeah, sure. I hope it can stand for a little while. It's really nice to be a part of history and – it's really, really special. Again, yeah, high percentage shots. The shots that I took and made are ones I'm supposed to make. There were a couple tough ones. I can think of a few off the top of my head. And Again, all credit goes to my teammates for putting me in the best position to score. They know where I like to get the ball, and I was able to be aggressive, and I was successful. So, again, it's really nice to get it over with. It was a little bit stressful leading up into the week before the game, and you want to try to, you know, make your first couple of shots. Only needed two to break the record, so you wanted to make sure those were easy ones, but they happened to come in the flow of the offense, which was nice. So, yeah, I'm really, really fortunate to have the record, but, again, I feel even better to be winning and being successful with my teammates and being a part of March Madness, so all credit goes to them.
So we're talking to Brandon Sherrod, 538, one of the many Sports Geek sites, gives you a 39% chance of winning your first-round matchup, which is actually pretty good for a 12 seed. I mean, that's close to 40, and 40 is close to 50, so it's basically a 50-50 toss-up. You know. One fun fact that I can give you about Baylor that maybe you can use against them somehow, they're the Bears, and they actually have a Class C zoo on the campus that just has two bears in it. They have a zoo just so that they can have bears.
No way.
Yeah. So maybe you can just taunt them about that or something.
Yeah, I'll have to bring that up on the free throw line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think they get really rattled when you actually mention the bears. The Bears, they have the names of judges for some reason. I don't know. Anyway, look into this. Do a little scouting. Hey, I have to bring up on one serious note. I'm sure it's your least favorite thing to talk about, but obviously the team's been through some tough times this year with the departure of the captain, Jack Montague, and a kind of controversy on campus. How much does that enter into all of your thinking? Are you guys able to shut it out, or is it a motivator, or what do you do with all that?
I think we've just been really focused on winning basketball games, and you know, you go back to after the Cornell game and not having Jack for that period of time. Obviously, that is tough, but we've been really, really focused, and coach has really taken to heart the fact that we have to win basketball games, and that's what we're doing here. And, you know, as long as we're staying locked in and not getting caught up in outside noise, I think we're going to be fine. So that's been something that we've worked on throughout the duration, the latter half of the Ivy League season, and now also going into this this week. We're just focused on playing basketball and trying to be as successful as we can.
Well, Brandon Sherrod, I'm certainly leaving work at about 2:40 on Thursday. I've been waiting for this since I was 8 years old, which is how old I was in 1962. So so go get them. Go get those bears, all right?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us. Right. And let's go out with Brandon singing a little bit with the Whiffin' Boos.
From my heart. Operator.
Joining us is Mike Pesca. He's the host of the Slate podcast, The Gist with Mike Pesca, and Hang Up and Listen, where, in fact, there's a great episode up already talking about all this stuff that we're talking about today. Welcome back to the Bill Curry and Julia Pistel NCAA bracketology show. You're an indispensable part of it, obviously.
Thank you. Yes, I'm the third unmentioned Beatle.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you're sort of the George Martin. All right, so one of the things that I've kind of gotten intrigued by today is a peculiar decision. I think we should sort of rant and rave a little bit about the selection process here. And the selection show, obviously, which was way too long. But the one that gets me is, and maybe you can help me understand this, the way that I understand this, the selection committee is allowed to look at a team whose record is maybe less than exemplary or less than what it could be, and kind of upgrade the team a little bit if there's some reason why, some unfair reason, some act of God reason why they didn't do as well. And that this year they did this for Syracuse because...
Right, act of God.
Because Mr. Boeheim, their coach, had been suspended for breaking NCAA rules.
Yes. Well, as Jim Boeheim says, the committee that selects the teams and the committee that hands out the suspensions are totally different committees. I guess the equivalent here is if there is a player who's hurt and the team was bad during the hurt player's part of the season, and then the player got back and he's been a lot better, you should take that into account. Also, if a team seemed good and then a player got hurt, you'll often see a team seated lower based on their expectation that the team won't be as good. Mm-hmm. So they looked at a number of Syracuse losses and how bad Syracuse was during Jim Boeheim's suspension and said, well, we're going to give him that win against St. John's. Jim Boeheim would have called two different plays in that game against one of the worst teams in college basketball. And if they got that win, it wouldn't even be a debate. Furthermore, they gave Syracuse a 10 seed as opposed to an 11 seed. And if you're an 11 seed, or at least some of the 11 seeds, though not all, which is weird, have to play a play-in game, which the NCAA has some jargon for, that where they try to tell us it's not a play-in game. So Syracuse was put ahead of teams like Wichita State, which was ranked pretty much for the entire year. Vanderbilt, which, you know, started the season as top 10 and was supposed to be a very good team and then had a rough patch, but is still a really good team. Michigan, which probably is a better team than Syracuse. So Syracuse got a better seed in men, not just the number, but in actually they're in the tournament proper. They don't have to go to Dayton to play a playing game based on the fact that if Jim Boeheim hadn't cheated a little, they'd have won some games. Seems logical to me.
So I'm very angry this year because Monmouth did not make the draw. Not because I really had much of an understanding of who Monmouth was or anything like that, although I gather they're a really good team and probably should have gotten in the draw, but because of their bench. Have you been following the story of the Monmouth bench crew?
Oh, sure. They're fantastic. And they peaked as a story because their bench was exciting. And then to add to the fact that they would put on these skits and they're just experts at pantomime. And by the way, the guys on the Monmouth bench, I mean, these are players on the lower rungs of Division I. So, of course, they're going to have a lot of time to put into their antics, right? They're not, you know, trying to work out for the pros. But they beat Georgetown. They beat UCLA. They're beating these very good teams. But out. When the season's over, Georgetown and UCLA actually turned out not to have been very good teams. So what were considered pretty good wins wound up being mediocre wins. And, you know, really, the committee just wanted to put in Tulsa for some reason in Syracuse. So Monmouth never really had a chance. Monmouth, team like St. Bonaventure, the absolute epitome of the teams that the tournament should be putting in, the tournament selection committee should be putting in. Syracuse, the couldn't be more of an epitome of a team that the tournament selection committee should not be putting in. And of course, they're the tournament selection committee because they do the totally wrong thing. They reward the powerful teams from the powerful conferences who don't do much, and they don't even see the error of their ways. They don't even see, they say, oh, look at all these good teams that Syracuse beat, or the fact that, you know, Syracuse losses weren't to bad teams. That's because they don't play bad teams because they're in a great conference. All you're doing is finding 10 different ways to say some teams are in powerful conferences and have all the advantages, and some teams are in lesser conferences and have all the disadvantages. And they find five different ways to say that, and they count all five of them against the teams in the lesser conferences.
Give us something for the person filling out his or her bracket today. Give them just one play that they can make.
I would, in this year, there were, every time a team went to number one, they got knocked off, and everyone talks about parity, and it is true, there are no great teams, there maybe even are just some good teams, and yet, when it comes to the tournament, we still talk about, this is the region from hell, and oh my God, how loaded it is. I would not look at number one seeds at all. I deeply discount them. I think Michigan State as a number two seed should be one of the favorites. And I really think Kentucky as a four seed has all the – remember, Kentucky won as an eight seed. So as a four seed, I think they have the strength to go very far. And a third thing I would do, if you want to be super tricky, I don't know. Some people's brackets, you have to know if Wichita State is going to beat Vanderbilt or not. But I think the winner of that game could beat Arizona. I think Wichita State could win a couple games in this tournament because they usually do.
I'll give you one back just so you can use it because I want to do fair trade here. So California, which the rest of the time we call it Berkeley. I don't know why it's always called California in the draw. But
yes.
UC Berkeley, look at them because of two things. First of all, I think they're the only team in the draw with an element named after them. There is an element called Berkelium. And the fruit cocktail was invented on the campus of – and by a professor, a food sciences professor at Berkeley. So – and Mike Pesca, you know, one of the things I admire about you in a very Ben Carson way – is the fruit cocktail of your life. So
these hands, Colin, these hands.
Yeah, they have too much lotion on them. That's why you can't make the touchscreen work. All right, Mike Pesca from the Gist with Mike Pesca and Hang Up and Listen. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Welcome back to our Bill Curry and Julia Pistel NCAA special. And this draw has been kind of doomed from the beginning. There was a two-hour CBS special that went on for what seemed to be like 5 hours to introduce to all the selections and all the brackets. In the middle of it, the actual brackets were leaked out on Twitter by somebody who had them, which seemed to wreck everything. And yes, Charles Barkley couldn't make the touchscreens work because there was too much lotion on his hands. He was trying to do all this kind of John King stuff on the screen, but his hands were over-lotioned. mentioned. So there have been problems already.
I wish that could be banned. Just entirely. Deletion? Politics, sport. No, the whole touch the screen.
Touch screen?
And,
no.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, get rid of it. It's too distracting.
I don't mind the touch screen, but I think people should be tested for lotion. All right. So we've got some other guests coming up here, Howie Dickenman and then Carolyn Biddy Martin, the president of Amherst College. But first, let's go back to our analysts here in the studio. So, Julia, just give us, you know, you've been using these kind of idiosyncratic facts about about these schools to predict the course of March Madness. Tell us kind of how you see things shaping up. Who are you bringing all the way to the big dance?
Well, you know, there are some, you know, strong facts in here. Buffalo could, you know, they could be in for a big upset because they were the first city to have street lamps, and that's pretty awesome. So, you know, however, they're not going to make it too far. I think the Cannibals of Colorado are going to go really, really far. Some other kind of interesting ones, also making it into the Final Four for me. Green Bay, this is a great fact that you found for me, Colin. I love this. It's the toilet paper capital of the world because the first, think about this, splinter-free toilet paper was produced here.
They make that now?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Wow. You can buy that in stores?
I think one of the interns gets credit for that one. But
Well, I mean, thank God. Can you guys imagine if that had not been invented?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Green Bay, you're going really far. Although there's some other great stuff in that Holy Cross had the first baseball team to serve beer in their stadium, and what is sports without beer, right? So that was a tough one for me. Other cool things in here are, let's see.
Well, we should talk about South Dakota State.
Tommy Heinsohn suggested that beer at Holy Cross.
Oh, yes, South Dakota State, yes, very important. A disturbing Wikipedia article that I can only hope is not completely real.
And we really do encourage people to read the entire article. We will not be able to summarize it adequately here.
It is South Dakota State University has a tradition called Hobo Day, which the history and practice, which continues to this day, is the most offensive set of things ever.
They have a parade on Hobo Day with a bum mobile.
Yep.
As political correctness continues to fight its way to the Dakotas, but still years away.
It was begun because the previous tradition was that women wore their nightgowns outside, which was too offensive. So they replaced that with hobos and Indians dressing up like that. And it shockingly is still a thing. Although it has a theme every year and you can kind of feel the students trying to make it better. Like in 2015, the theme was always an adventure. Aw.
I think the one that was one that was like 007 Hobos Never Die or something like that.
So that's right.
So they have themes and stuff like that. So, yes. So just to come back to an earlier theme, one of the things we learned about Colorado is they have a snack bar named after an actual cannibal, Alfred Packer. Mm-hmm. So you've got – who have you got going farther in that – this? It's called the South Bracket. Are the hobos or the cannibals going further on your
– You know, I mean, obviously cannibals up against any human opponent would win. So, unfortunately, the hobos go down. They get eaten by Colorado. And I think that makes complete logical sense. Don't roll your eyes at me.
All right.
I'm not.
So very quickly before we go to Bill, tell us your final four. Tell us who you really sort of think comes out on top of all this.
Sure. Obviously, we've got our cannibals. We've got our Green Bay toilet paper. We have Seton Hall. And I don't want to, you know, discount this as like a fun fact because it's really very awesome. Has the first openly gay player ever.
In March Madness.
Which is way overdue. So
okay,
good
so
for
that's
them.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yep. And I also have.
I'm sorry. What bracket are they? Where are they?
They're in the Midwest.
So we're rooting for them.
Yeah.
Oh, we're
yeah.
rooting for them. That's so cool.
Yeah, first time ever for Seton Hall, frankly, on my own. But
yeah. Well, you know, let's hope they win.
They cheated like crazy in the Big East, but let bygones be bygones.
In the Eastern Division, and I think they might take it all the way. I really like Xavier because their assistant coach is Bill Murray's son, and he used to go to the games, but he doesn't anymore because he thinks that he jinxes them, which means that Bill Murray is the only person who doesn't like Bill Murray. And I think that's important for us to consider here.
Right. He has been known to show up at the games.
Pull yourself together, would you?
He's got this baseball hat with a big, big X on it that he wears. And he looks very goofy in it. Yeah. All right. So there you go. A comedian endorsing a team coached by a comedian's son. And so let's go over to Bill Curry. And by the way, Jonathan McNichol is pointing out that if you don't have splinter-free toilet paper, then lotion becomes more important.
That's true.
So it kind of ties two themes together. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Bill Curry, give us your overarching theory of this year's draw.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is the smart thing, which is simply repeat verbatim, syllable by syllable, everything Mike Pesca just said.
Right. Mm.
Because he's right. And he's really right about the front runners and not going with that. And I should also ease up. I just did a column in Salon today about politics in which I said that we should end all these predictive polls and they should just take a week off because the future is just chock full of stuff that hasn't happened yet and who knows. Mm-hmm. And now I go to this one in a trillion NCAA bracket and contradict myself. And this year it's one in 2 trillion because these guys are all so evenly matched right across the board. I just looked up it before coming over here. Last year, the top five teams had 17 defeats among them. This year, the top five have 29 defeats.
Wow.
And, you know, more 67, whatever the percentage increase is in that. This is a field that's been just in flux throughout. I always like Michigan State because they play their hearts out in these things. And so I also agreed, looking at those top few teams, if there was one that was going to blow through. And I really do believe if you look at that South bracket, if UConn pulls up the upset of the century, I get it. Number one tournament seed, Kansas. This is a good defensive team. It really has a shot. Its path after that is a doable one. And that's the last serious thing I'll say about this is just that you've seen this thing where the college looks more like the NBA, and it's more like the NBA because people feel like they're rooting for jerseys. And you see it when Boston College becomes part of the ACC or Maryland leaves the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference of the South, and goes and joins the Big Ten. They're all doing it for big football contracts. The rivalries go as that happens. The fan base sort of changes. You have celebrity coaches and celebrity players. Nobody does the old Dean Smith four corners anymore. The discipline plays, in part because it's a little discredited, but also because there aren't any teams disciplined enough to pull off really great offenses.
You just
like
did
that.
Like eight grumpy so old basketball men.
I'm almost done. So what does that mean?
And these kids with their phones, they're on the bench, they're looking at their phones.
I got a point. It means what I said before, and that is that you take a team that's superbly coached like Michigan, or you take a team that's superbly coached like Connecticut, and where the defense especially is really, really strong. Those are the teams that actually can pop through here. So I'm not just another UConn lickspittle, although I am a proud alum.
Yeah,
I'm just saying here, there's a shot for something really good.
Bill is pro-defense because I put him on the defensive every single year.
That's what I'm thinking when I walk in the door now.
We have to go to a break here, but for a transcription of Bill's lickspittle UConn remarks, I just read the UConn coverage.
It's a good thing I have no feelings, you know, because otherwise this would really hurt. This would really hurt. Is down and see who's standing last. You better guard your man. He shook that double team. It's anybody's game. First see the bubbles. Yeah, it's much madness. This is what happens.
It is the decision of WNPR management that this show will not be making any jokes about Oregon State coach Wayne Tinkle or his son, injured starting forward Trey Tinkle. I think we're better than that, and we want to respect the seriousness of the public radio audience. Wayne Tinkle. Today's show was produced by Jonathan McPants and me, Kyone Wolf. Greg Hill appeared in the intro and tweets for us at WNPR Colin. Special thanks to interns Ross Levin and Stephanie Reif. The part of Bill Curry was played by any member of the Tinkle family. For show pages, articles, and videos of the Here and Now staff filling out their brackets, go to our website, wnpr.org/Colin. On tomorrow's show, leadership. And now, back to Colin.
Yes, so welcome back to our Bracketology show. We've had a chance to talk to Brandon Sherrod, one of the exciting players for Yale University, making its first appearance in the tournament. Mike Pesca, who has been a sports reporter, but now, of course, hosts two different Slate podcasts, including the sports podcast, Hang Up and Listen. We've got in the studio with us Bill Curry and Julia Pestel, as we do every year. And so we've talked to some people who are basketball experts or think they're basketball experts, but we haven't really talked to a real, real basketball expert with real credentials, somebody who can really claim to know something about basketball. So now we're going to talk to Howie Dickenman. He's the retiring head coach of Central Connecticut State University, and he's been coaching the Blue Devils for the last 20 years. He's looking forward to retirement. He's going to find out for the first time in many decades what it's like not to be hoarse all the time. Howie Dickenman, welcome to the show.
Hi, Colin. Nice to be on the show. Sounds like everyone's having a good time.
We're trying to have a good time here. So you've done this. You've been through these brackets a bunch of times as a coach and as an assistant coach before that. Maybe you could just tell us, what's it like to be on a team that's heading into this? Even if you're a 15 seed or a 16 seed, it's got to be just an incredible thrill to have a whole nation kind of watching what's happening to your team.
Well, it is a thrill, and we've been, as you said, three times, and a number of times at the University of Connecticut when I worked there for 14 years. But it's about the players, and, you know, you're in the weight room or you're having a tough practice, and I always tell the players, you know, you're not going to maybe be rewarded today or maybe next month, but you will be rewarded with an NCAA berth if you keep working this hard or you keep pumping that iron down there. So there are rewards for hard work and good people and people that persevere. So that's what I tell them. And it's worked out, like I said, three or four times here. And I'm sure it's worked out at Connecticut, where I'm sure working with Jim Calhoun, he would use that same type of philosophy. And I know Kevin is a guy that, I don't know if anybody works harder than him. He's always been an underdog all of his life. He never got the publicity he could have gotten at the University of Connecticut, Colin, because there were so many other good players that, you know, got the spotlight. And then he just climbed his way into the NBA, undrafted, and just made, I believe it was 13 years in the league.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Kevin Ollie, of course, the coach of UConn. So the other thing that you've experienced, obviously, is having a team sitting in the least enviable position in the brackets. I mean, a team like Central coming in there usually has been fighting and scrapping and clawing its way into the brackets. But then you're a 16 seed or you're a 15 seed. These are, you know, I mean, 16 seeds have never won. So what do you say to the team at that point? You know, everybody in America is bringing out the other team. Their number one seeded opponent is being brought out onto the next line. What do you say to your players to make it seem possible for them?
Well, you know, we played Pittsburgh 1 year, and it we played in Pittsburgh against the University of Pittsburgh. And what I was thinking about was just, hey, we're taking on the whole city. We're not going to have many fans here compared to what Pittsburgh's going to have. So it's us against them. I gave that kind of a theory. And you know, and I do tell them and explain to them, because we've been a 14, a 15, and a 16. And when we were 14 or 15, I said, chances are, rarely has this happened. And I always had the percentage of times a 15 would be to 2, like Richmond did 1 year against Syracuse, or a 14, your percentage of winning is this amount. And so what? We're going to break into that, and we're going to raise this percentage. So always trying to motivate, always trying to give them the positive. But, you know, from the time your name or your team is drawn, there's such an anxiety on that selection Sunday. You sit and you wait and you wait and you wait until, you know, where are you going and who are you playing. And I, watching the show this year, I thought the teams that weren't selected in the first part of the show, the anxiety, the buildup. Now, I'm a Stony Brook fan. I went down Saturday to see them make the tournament, and they were in the last group of mentioned, and I'm just thinking, like, wow, you're waiting, and how tough it is. But that's, you know, the way it is sometimes. But you're there, and you have pizza, and you have wings, and you have media there, and, you know, and I tell the guys, hey, you earned it. Nobody gives you anything in life. Nobody gives you anything. And so you've earned it. You've earned the opportunity, and let's take full advantage of it.
So let's talk about that Stony Brook team. A lot of people feel, if anything, they're underseeded. They really could be seeded even higher than they are. And they do have maybe my favorite player, just in terms of a story and who he is, this guy Jameel Warney, who grew up as kind of the quintessential overweight kid, taunted about his weight, and then has just turned into this superb athlete. A lot of people feel as though he might be one of the, you know, 5 or 10 best players in the country. So, Howie, how good is Stony Brook?
Stony Brook is, you know, Steve Peichel was recruited at the University of Connecticut. One tough guy as far as desire, okay, dedication. And then he was at Yale a little bit and then Wesleyan a little bit, and he was the first assistant here for 5 years. And we went to the NCAA tournament a couple of times when he was here. And I give him the credit for us getting there because of the players he recruited and the teaching that he did. But I'm a Steve Peichel fan. They've had some tough luck in championship games, and last year they lose on a prayer at Albany by an Albany player who throws up a desperation shot from three, and he wins the game at the buzzer. So he's had a couple of other tough defeats, but he had this game I went down to, and getting back to Jamal, Jamal is leader. He's got great poise. He is a very good player. I know there's been about 19 NBA teams and scouts that have been there to during practice or to games, and the team scored 80 the other day, Colin. Mm-hmm. He had 43. He took 22 shots. He made 18. And he had double-figure rebounds. And I was just so happy for him because he could have gone to a bigger school, but he hung in there with Coach Pikel. And, again, talk about rewards and satisfaction. He was happy as anyone. But I was just proud of Steve. And they play Kentucky. And it was a few years ago, not many, maybe a couple years ago, they played at Kentucky. And I may be wrong with this, but it might have been a single-digit loss. So don't underestimate Stony Brook. They're extremely well coached, like many, many teams are here, but they're fundamentally sound. And Steve Pikel is what I call one of the up-and-coming and a rising coach. In the last 8 years, five of those years, they've had 22 or more victories. Hmm.
So Howie Dickinman, we're running out of time here, but do you have one last tournament insight? People are filling out their brackets, and so to be able to get the insight of a coach like you, I know most you don't have a lot of time to watch games that you're not preparing for that team, but anybody in this draw that you really like is kind of a Cinderella favorite?
Yes, you know, and people will pick Kansas, they'll pick Michigan State, they'll pick North Carolina, Kentucky. I'm going to pick Oregon because the way they finished, and they have – No, they won the Pac-10. They lost two games in a row, and that's because one of their star players didn't play, and the other game was when a player just got off an injury. So I'm picking Oregon the way they beat Arizona at the end, and they'll be in the finals, and they'll play University of Connecticut. And I should probably say I'm going to give you the final two. Mm-hmm. It'll be Connecticut, and it will be Oregon.
All right.
And, you know, even though I'm picking Oregon, I'm going to be cheering for Connecticut.
You and Bill Curry. All right. Thanks, Howie Dickinman, retiring coach of the Central Connecticut State University Blue Devils men's basketball team. He'll be actually getting his voice back in the next year or two. He's been yelling on the basketball court for as long as
I've known him. And done a great job.
And done a terrific job.
Done a great, great job. Yeah.
All right, so we've got a little bit of time before we go to our final feature here, which is Amherst. So I'm going to ask you guys for a few of your just very final insights. Bill Curry, I don't think you've really told us exactly what your Final Four is. Have you told us that yet?
I don't have a Final Four. I can't say it's impossible to predict and then pretend that I've got one. I like Oregon. I am also in the Oregon-Michigan State. They're going to do really well. I really do believe that Connecticut could have a sort of another dream season, so I'm not betting against them. My real dream, I think that Yale could meet Connecticut in the national semifinal game, and that would be certainly something we'd remember forever. It's not a prediction. I'm just saying that when you peruse
the
bracket,
it's mathematically possible.
I'm saying yes. Yeah. I'm saying that it's
given
possible.
Given the laws of physics, that could happen.
Yeah, and I'm saying that if you would just start looking on the bright side of life a little more, you'd see possibilities like this more often yourself, and then things would really start to pick up.
All right. So Julia, among all the complicated and obscure insights that you were able to come up with about teams, is there one or two last ones you want to share with us before we visit with the president of Amherst?
Yes. I mean, I'm so sorry. Some of these guys are clearly not going to make it. Like UNC Wilmington, that's where Dawson's Creek was filmed. And if you're my age, that's a humongous deal.
Well, the high school. I think the high school, Capeside High School, that's where I was looking.
Yes. Yeah. And similarly, there was a Hootie and the Blowfish song shot somewhere. Oh, in Maryland.
Yeah, University of Maryland. It was their Armory Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. I Only Want to Be With You.
Yeah.
Oh, and we've been talking about baby.
I think you should be disqualified for having anything to do with Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, my God.
I think you should not make the seeds.
Okay. Well, one more thing. We keep talking about baby Obama, but what about Barack Obama Senior? The real person went to Hawaii. So,
well, no, he actually – so Barack Senior went to University of Hawaii, where he graduated in 3 years, Phi Beta Kappa. Obama's mother was also a student there and then dropped out because of the pregnancy, then came back as a student a little bit later on, and that's where she met husband number two, the Indonesian surveyor guy, who was also a student at the University of Hawaii. None of this, you will note, ever happened in Kenya. It all happened in Hawaii. So, but anyway, yes, Barack Obama
will be a state soon.
Yes, exactly.
So, I'm going to make one prediction, and that is that Julia's bracket beats mine.
All right.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Here we go. This is it.
That's it. Yeah.
All right. That's so one of the
almost
things
like predicting the recent past.
Yeah, right, exactly. One of the things that I've liked to do in recent years is look at Division III because, first of all, there's a lot of teams right around here that are Division III teams. Trinity, for example, was in the draw this year. But one team has emerged as a superpower, as Bill Curry said, kind of the UConn of the Pioneer Valley, because, in fact, both their men's and women's basketball teams, because the agrarian calendar of Division III moves a little faster and starts a little sooner than the Division I one does, the Final Four is almost upon us. We already know who's in the Final Four. Both the men's and women's basketball teams have made this year's Division III Final Four. Joining us is Carolyn Biddy Martin, president of Amherst College, to talk about how this esteemed, academically prized small college has turned itself into a ruthless basketball factory. So, President Martin, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So what's happening up there? How did first of all, one of the big changes you made was getting rid of your sort of mascot name. You were the Lord Jeffs for a while for a lot of fairly good reasons. You guys decided to stop being the Lord Jeffs. Did this bring you some incredible wave of good fortune?
Well, to quote one of you from an earlier moment, I think you were talking about Austin Peay. It's a complex history. We don't want to talk about that much.
Right. Exactly. But then it's good to talk about history, right? It's good to talk about history because that's how you learn.
They do well in basketball. They drop history.
I think actually that what accounts for the success is the great coaching and the extraordinary student athletes that we end up bringing to Amherst.
So, obviously, this is the kind of thing that maybe doesn't get the sort of television attention, the national news media attention that the Division I does. But what does it do for your campus? I mean, you really do have, heading into the Final Four, you've got these two teams that are both competitive. I mean, what kind of energy does that put on the Amherst campus?
Well, I think everybody's excited. It's our campus where, as you said a few minutes ago, academics is really the coin of the realm, and yet excellence in athletics has long been a signature of Amherst. So there's a lot of excitement, and, the women's team gets to go to Indianapolis where they're celebrating women's basketball. So D1, D2, and D3 Final Fours are all happening in Indianapolis on the same weekend. So that's an exciting, very exciting experience for the women's team.
Doesn't Amherst claim to have invented physical fitness or something that you had like the first?
Yes, we claim it, and I think it's true.
Yeah.
Yes. It had the first physical education program back in
1860.
Yeah.
1860. We've studied your history carefully.
Well, I was going to say, but what's the fun fact you came up with?
Well, yeah, you know, with this, we didn't come up with a specific one. One thing that we should mention that is Amherst is sometimes referred to as part of the Little Three, along with Williams and then our local team Wesleyan. And some people, because this rivalry is over 100 years old, say that this is the oldest "quote unquote" athletic conference in the nation, the Little Three.
Yeah, I think it might. At the very least, I know the football rivalry between Williams and Amherst is either the oldest in the country or one of the two oldest in the country. So physical education, as you say, and athletics has been a big part of Amherst since its beginnings, really.
So President Martin, let's look at these two Final Four brackets. Some of these Division III teams, it's hard to know exactly what they are. So Amherst, the men are going to play Benedictine, which I think is an order of monks as opposed to a college, but that's fine. And then they have to play, if they get past that, they play the winner of St. Thomas, Minnesota versus Christopher Newport. Is that like some guy or something? Or I mean,
well, here's the thing. Because I'm from what was then rural Virginia, I know what Christopher Newport is, and one of my cousins actually went there.
All right, so
but we will beat Christopher Newport in the finals.
I expect you to crush them. And then on the women's side, you got to get past Thomas Moore, who's had a lot of bad publicity with Wolf Hall. You know, very unflattering picture of Thomas Moore. And so you beat him, and then it's Tufts versus Wartburg. So, and I assume you see another championship headed your way.
Oh, I certainly hope so. We've split with Tufts this season. Tufts beat the women's team, the one loss we had. And then we turned around and beat them. So that'll be a great championship game, which I'm sure we will prevail in.
All right. So, President Martin, we have to go. The way things are shaping up, you're going to be using championship trophies to prop open doors and stuff like that. You'll just have so many of them. But thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Bill Curry, Julia Pistel, everybody else who helped out, Howie Dickenman, Mike Pesca, and Baby Obama himself, Brandon Sherratt. Did I skip anybody? I think I got everybody. All right. Well, and thanks to Jonathan McPants. He's the guy who had to pull this whole thing together.
My March Madness prediction, everybody's going to go out there and give it everything they've got. They're going to push hard. They're going to power through that defense and dominate the court. And then pretty much almost all of them are going to lose. So.